Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life. Now here's the host of Faith Matters, Tom McGovern.
I'm Tom McGovern, host of Faith Matters, and it's my delight this Sunday afternoon to have as our special guest my friend and my colleague for many years at the Health Sciences Center, Sharon Cowhout. And Sharon, welcome. Before we came on air, we were talking with Chuck. It's so nice to see people again after all this distancing. And, you know, on reflection, we began to plan for this program exactly a year ago. So 1 year later, here we are, back on air again. It's a wonderful feeling.
And ironically, talking about a road trip that most people haven't been able to get out and do anything, people being able to get out and venture out again. So
it's wonderful in the sense of hope again, in the sense of restoration of connections. It's relationships, personal, communal, societal, that makes us all bloom and blossom as human beings. And basically, you've been a native of Lubbock for 40 years.
Right. I came here to attend Texas Tech in 1967 and have come and gone since then.
In the meantime, you've lived both in Atlanta and in Washington, D.C.
Right.
Of course, this is Black History Month, and I think in a very special way, the special journey, pilgrimage, I would almost say, that you were on almost about a year and a half ago that prompted the conversation we're going to have this afternoon. What prompted this particular journey, which was so transformative for you?
Well, this was in the fall of 2018, and a friend asked if I wanted to accompany him on what he called a civil rights tour. I didn't know what to expect. I certainly had lived in Atlanta and had seen a number of civil rights memorials and such in Atlanta, but I had never really thought about going off around and doing a tour. And so he planned it. We listened to speeches in the car. We listened to songs like We Shall Overcome and just immersed ourselves in the civil rights movement. What started off as a lark for me, just as a companion, turned out to be really one of the major transformative events of my life. I just didn't feel like I could keep quiet about it. So here I am.
All of us, you know, all three of us involved in the program this Sunday afternoon and the listeners, we've all had those transformative moments, moments in time where an event or a word or a relationship, something in our life, thinking of Paul on the road to Emmaus, he had that Emmaus moment, and a moment of, it's not always easy, but it's a moment of looking at a life in a different way, looking at events, looking at relationships, looking at people in a different way.
Shifted my worldview within an 8-day period. I've really never looked at the world the same since. I can honestly say that.
Where were you in terms of your understanding of civil rights and in terms of the understanding of Black people?
Well, again, I had left Lubbock. I had worked at Texas Tech. I had gotten a job with the Centers for Disease Control in Atlanta. That was just a new phase of my life. I left and I worked there for 5 years, and I had just never known such diversity in the workplace and my social life. It was just a new world to me in a very positive way. I ended up coming back to Lubbock to take another job, and as soon as I was offered a job in Washington, D.C. with the Centers for Disease Control, I jumped at it. And that, again, was a very diverse place, lots of new experiences, and it just added to my understanding. I think I've commented to you that I'm at a point in my life where I'm pushing myself out of my comfort zone and into really trying to understand and listen to other people, especially around the topics of race, the civil rights movement.
Now, of course, you lived through the civil rights movement in your own personal and professional experience. You brought your own experiences to this new journey.
I did, except I have to say, I was very sheltered. I was raised in Dallas, Texas, where, you know, I went to a white Catholic girls' school. It wasn't my world. It was the world outside of me that I really wasn't a part of the civil rights movement. And that's an embarrassment to me now that there was all of this going on that I didn't really have a clue about. For instance, it's not just about Black history. It's our history. And my history as a white person is involved in that Black history, and I have a role and responsibility in it. I'm on a quest to learn more about what's my role now going forward.
Sharon, in reflecting on the milestones and the principles around the civil rights movement, what strikes you as most important for the conversation that we're having today and the conversation for our listeners, for our community?
Well, first of all, we hear about it, but I didn't understand the import of the
nonviolent movement. I mean, Martin Luther King had gone to India and was committed to a movement that was not based on bigotry or hatred. It was based on love and nonviolence. And I don't think I ever really internalized that. That made a very strong impact on me. You know, there were three themes that kept going through my head from beginning to end of the period, and that was the themes of love, hate, and courage. And it didn't matter what museum I was in or what memorial I was attending, I just had a sense of where did the ability come, first of all, on our side. When I say our side, I'm talking about whites. Where does that kind of hatred come from? I mean, I'm standing at the lynching memorial in Montgomery, Alabama, you know, looking at memorials to 4,400 black people that were lynched. And lynching, I learned, wasn't just about hanging. It was about murder. And I mean, you know, it was killing in some form or fashion. And the kind of hatred that that took. And then I would walk down the street to Dexter Avenue Baptist Church and would be welcomed by these two warm, wonderful black women that invited us to join their gospel choir. It was hard to put that kind of hatred and that kind of love together, and I just wanted to understand it better. And the courage that it took for a teenager to walk through the mob in Little Rock, Arkansas, with people spitting on her and hitting on her and her trying to just get to the school door. It was events like that that just...
It was a black teenager.
It was a black teenager, right, in 1957 when Central High School was integrated. I met a freedom rider in Montgomery at the Freedom Rides Museum. He just happened to stop by, and that was just such a special occasion for me. I mean, he was pulled off a bus and beaten and sent to prison. I just like, wow, where does that kind of courage come from?
See, it's love, hate, and courage, which are... In ways, they saw the two of them combine and the other seems to be in opposition to it. But I think putting them together in a spirit of nonviolence, which Martin Luther King certainly practiced and preached was as the essence of the civil rights movements, it was out of this context of your own appreciation of the previous civil rights movement and then reliving the realities of this experience in this special journey in the fall of 2018 that became the center for your experiences.
I think I've mentioned to you, but one of the very first things I saw that laid things out in a different way was the Reconstruction four-part series on PBS.
For me, that was a really gut-wrenching, mind-changing experience too, that what might have happened if Lincoln's original wish and of Congress and of people, if it had been realized, well, what a different history we would have had.
After Lincoln's death, even, there was so much progress made. I mean, we passed the 13th and the 14th Amendments, giving rights, you know, to former slaves, and they elected their own representatives to Congress and had two senators, and then a deal, political deal made in 1877 with Hayes coming in as president, and it took all the federal troops that were in the South kind of protecting the blacks. They pulled them back, and that's when Jim Crow started.
So it's out of this your own personal experience of the civil rights movement, your admiration, and which was a tour to begin with, which became a holy pilgrimage in a way.
Absolutely.
At this point, Sharon, we'll take a short break, and then we'll be back to continue this very interesting conversation.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Our special guest this Sunday afternoon is Sharon Cohout. Sharon is sharing with us a very transformative pilgrimage she had through various places associated with the civil rights movement. So Sharon, as you began this journey, you began it in Birmingham. Why Birmingham? And what did you learn from your experiences in Birmingham?
We had to look at the map and decide what made the most sense. So the trip wasn't necessarily in chronological order. So the places this will be, it sound a little disjointed, but my framework is from 1948 when President Truman integrated the armed forces until the death of Martin Luther King in 1968. So it's that 20-year period. Birmingham, it's probably most well known for the bombing that killed the four little girls in 1963 at 16th Avenue Baptist Church. But there's a wonderful civil rights institute there that's right across from the church, just directly across the street. I was a little less familiar with this, although I've seen images on TV. This was where the Children's Crusade was, where children just peacefully came out of school and were marching down the street. And Bull Connor, who was the infamous head of the police department there, used these water hoses and dogs chomping at the children's heels to disperse the crowd, and then ended up putting the children in jail for days. Those are the images that really stick with people. And then there was also, we toured an area of Birmingham called Bombingham because of all the bombings that took place in what was called the black area of town. Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth was a big activist there, and oh my gosh, his home was bombed I don't know how many times. But the murder of the children was, I think, the part that...
The most moving part, yeah.
Right.
And then from Birmingham, you went on to...
To Montgomery. It was just unbelievable. The Freedom Rides Museum there that highlighted the efforts of the Freedom Riders back in 1961. The Rosa Parks Museum is wonderful. In 1955, it was Rosa Parks that wouldn't give her seat up to a white person. She was booked and jailed, and there's a whole museum around her.
Sharon, in your time in Montgomery again, is there any particular person that you met that stands out as a...
The premier site in Montgomery is the new National Memorial for Peace and Justice, and it's also called the Lynching Memorial. But it's a very moving outdoor memorial to the 4,400 victims of lynching. I can't even describe it other than it's these steel pillars hanging from chains that very much in the end resemble sort of bodies that could be hanging from trees, but it's beautifully done. Very sobering, very moving, and it was actually founded by Brian Stevenson, who wrote the book Just Mercy, and also there's a movie also made from that.
That book and that movie, again, are gut-wrenching,
yes,
and challenging.
Yes, they are, right. And there's a museum there called the Legacy Museum that ties in with the memorial that starts with slavery and actually goes through the continuing issues around mass incarceration of black men. What I was going to say, the transformative event for me was walking from that museum over to the Dexter Avenue Baptist Church. And I mean, I was just filled with such shame and horror over the museum. And I walk into the church and these two women open the doors and welcoming us with open arms saying, "We are so glad that you are here and we want you to come on up and join our gospel choir." They had a tour group and we went up and I was just so struck by the hate I had just seen versus the love in response. And that probably is my biggest takeaway. When people ask me for one event that struck me, that was it. From there, we did go to Selma. Just walking across the Edmund Pettus Bridge was, again, another very meaningful experience in the trip. We're all familiar probably with John Lewis and was involved in the March to Montgomery.
I've never been on that bridge. You've been on it and?
Several times, numerous times, and it never ceases to move me. Selma itself is a small community, and there's a small museum there and the bridge. But from Selma, we went up to Jackson, Mississippi, where there is a wonderful new museum called the Mississippi Civil Rights Museum. I think it's important because Mississippi was kind of the heart of the hate for me in the civil rights movement. It was where Emmett Till was killed, the 14-year-old from Chicago who was visiting relatives. He flirted with a white woman, supposedly, and was dragged out and killed over the next couple of days. And the woman that supposedly he flirted with recanted her tale. And so it was just sad. A lot of things went down in Mississippi. The three young men that were working on voting rights who were found murdered. And the Civil Rights Museum doesn't pull any punches. I mean, there's a plaque on the front saying that this was paid for by the taxpayers of Mississippi.
The fact that a state would have the courage to acknowledge its own part in the history, they'd be willing to tell the story of brokenness, of oppression, of all the horror that went with it. At the same time, we're acknowledging our history in the hope of reconciliation and of understanding. And then your journey took you to Memphis?
Yes. What I think is the crown jewel of the museums is the National Civil Rights Museum at the Lorraine Motel, where Martin Luther King was assassinated. It's just a very unusual design. They've built this wonderful museum, but back and around and under the motel is stands and looks just like it did back in 1968. We spent a full day at that museum. You wrap around and you end up right in front of the hotel room where King was assassinated from across the street. Then our last stop was actually one of my very favorites, and it was just a specific event. It wasn't a big museum, but it was to the Central High Visitor Center in Little Rock. In 1957, the schools had been integrated with Brown versus Board of Education in 1954, and the South just refused to integrate. So these nine teenagers were recruited because they were the cream of the crop. They were just going to go to school. I mean, their school was the crappy school down the street that got all the leftover desks and old textbooks that were ripped and torn. And but when they tried to go to Central High, Orville Faubus had sent his troops in and didn't want the kids to be able to get into the school. So there's a wonderful story that's told by one of the students. It's called Warriors Don't Cry. And it's a book by Melba Beals, who was one of the Little Rock Nine. It was just a wonderful retelling of a very sad event. I think the thing that really impressed me was I did some research about the nine students. Those nine students, once they got into school, went on to become a PhD in psychology. One was a writer for NPR. One was the Assistant Secretary of Housing and Urban Affairs. I mean, all nine of them went on to be.
And what a hopeful, wonderful way to finish your swing through all these very memorable and memory-filled and event-filled situations. At this point, Sharon, we'll take a short break, and then we'll be back in a few moments to continue this challenging and fascinating and enlightening conversation.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Here again is your host, Tom McGovern.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. If you're just joining us this Sunday afternoon, we're on the pilgrimage with Sharon Coates, and we are remembering with her a special journey through places in the South which were intimately associated with the civil rights. Now, looking back over that experience, which was so transformative for you, and certainly a white woman's perspective on a Black experience, but it's an American experience for all of us. We bring it all together. It's part of the one country that we belong to. What's the point of reliving old horrors, and what's the point of looking again into this dark time in our history?
It was indeed a dark and ugly time, and the reality is, for many, it's still a very dark and ugly time. Like Faulkner says, the past is never dead. It's not even past. But this is my perspective. Until we can come to the grips with these atrocities of the past that we cannot heal as a nation. I just believe understanding happens when we pull our history out and examine it. There's a quote by Maya Angelou painted on the side of the Legacy Museum in Montgomery, and it says, "History, despite its wrenching pain, cannot be unlived, but if faced with courage, need not be lived again." I have friends that say, oh, I would never want to go on a trip like that and go to a lynching memorial. I mean, you know, they just think, oh, horrors. But I tell people, and one of my favorite phrases is, feel the fear and do it anyway. Because if it can, and again, I can only speak from my perspective, it just gave me such a better understanding of how we got here, but of ways to look at how we're going to move forward. As an aside, I'm in a book club, and over the years, we have read a lot of books about the Holocaust and World War II. We have always been, I would say, self-righteous about, well, how could the Germans have let that happen? Why didn't they do something? You know, I realized after my civil rights tour that we had our own horrors to account for. Seeing a picture of a young Black man hanging lifeless from a tree at a Sunday afternoon picnic on the courthouse lawn, while adults and children look on with gleeful looks on their faces, this scene was made into a postcard that people would send out. Just the horror of it, the fact that it took place in my lifetime, in my country, was just beyond painful. Each exhibit brought home in its own way how crucial it is that we understand why and how these things happened.
With hope and faith and courage, I think we can continue forward with our eyes open, really.
And it gives us a frame of reference for better understanding the frustrations that are borne out now in the Black Lives Matter protest and in the high rates of incarceration of Black Americans. It's not just then. We will continue to have these issues until we can pull it out and look at the ugly and what we need to do going forward.
And, you know, also it's important, like, we don't demonize or idealize, try to tell the story as it was and as it is. It's not politically politicized either, because it's a history of both of our political parties, not just one. And it's not demonized one over the other. As a society facing the struggle, the suffering, with a spirit of compassion, of care, and try and heal the memories and deal with the present realities in the same present. Any other thoughts that come to mind as you try to pull this experience together for our listeners this Sunday afternoon?
At each memorial and each museum, there were just quiet heroes. And I would say John Lewis was one. Just those people that stood out trying to do their small part, the students with the nonviolent demonstrations in Greensboro, you know, sitting at a lunch counter. Those quiet heroes are probably what moved me as much as anything, because I end up thinking, would I have had the courage to do the right thing? Would I have sat at that lunch counter and taken the abuse? Would I have ridden that freedom bus? Would I have been a part of that march or that crusade? I mean, who among us has the courage to do that? And I ask myself that often. Where would we be if they hadn't had the courage to do it?
How do we share our truth with others who may not share our particular understanding of it?
I invite them to do the research, to do what it would take for them to try and understand. You know, as I mentioned, in the prayer of St. Francis and the great Bill Russell both say how much more important it is to understand than to be understood. Most of us, including me, are so intent on getting our position out there that we fail to listen, to really listen to what the other side is saying.
And going back, you know, what impressed me again in terms of what you shared with us today, that the state of Mississippi would fund from its own funds a museum that recognizes its history. That to me is a marvelous expression of a willingness to face the suffering as it is, and it's in the hope of achieving reconciliation, understanding, and ongoing change.
That was an example of Mississippi coming out of its comfort zone of trying to hide it and really trying to be part of the solution, which is, I think, what I'm trying personally to do and what I encourage other people to think about doing. As a result of this, I've gone on, joined reading circles that are discussing books that really challenge assumptions that I had, like, you know, I've mentioned to you white fragility and caste. I've had during COVID the opportunity to be in on Zoom meetings that really foster cross-racial conversations about difficult topics like racism, implicit bias, and controversies such as the placement of Civil War monuments. It's important to hear both sides and to listen. It's just sparked an interest in me at this stage of my life to see if I can't make a difference.
And let's go out on John Lewis.
He himself was a freedom rider and on the front lines of the march from Selma to Montgomery. And I read, as part of my post-civil rights tour interest, I read his autobiography, Walking with the Wind. He has a concept about the beloved community, which he calls a community bound together by love and respect. And these are the final lines from his book. As a nation, if we care for the beloved community, we must move our feet, our hands, hearts, our resources to build and not to tear down, to reconcile and not to divide, to love and not to hate, to heal and not to kill. In the final analysis, we are one people, one family, one house, the American house, the American family. God rest his soul.
Amen. To our listeners this evening who are our beloved community, what we have shared this afternoon, I hope it'll be an inspiration for all of us in our own way to be a beloved community of caring and of loving and of compassion, loving our neighbor as we love ourselves, in that way fulfilling the holy calling of all of us as God's holy children. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tom. I've certainly enjoyed it.
It's been a delight. Thank you.
You've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Tom McGovern. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. a service of Texas Tech Public Media.